So we're on our fourth class, four out of four of the Dharma Toolkit. And so we've been going through Tibetan Buddhist ritual. And last week we looked at the short mandala and how there are many layers of profundity with the short mandala, how we have the outer offering, we have the inner offering, offering our whole body and experience, and also offering our negativities up as well so we can release those. The secret and suchness offering, always remembering emptiness. And if you have an initiation, to arise as the deity and offer as the deity. So there's a lot of kind of the really deep philosophical practice behind the mandala offering last week. So this week we're looking at the big one, which is the long mandala offering. And I'm hoping most of you have seen a long mandala offering at some stage. I am going to demonstrate how to do one. If you haven't seen one, you're just going to be gobsmacked. I'm warning you now. So the long mandala offering itself is enormous fun. It puts the party into the puja, I tell you what. And in particular, Tara Puja is called the four mandala Tara Puja. So you get to do the mandala four times. So one of those is going to work out. So it's a fantastic practice ground. And really that's our whole purpose, isn't it? We're practicing until enlightenment. So we're going to have a look at generally what mandalas are. I've got a really nice kind of illustrated little lecture for the beginning, and then dive into actually doing the long mandala offering itself. So we can set our motivation. Our temporary or kind of immediate motivation is the one of why we even learning ritual. We're learning Tibetan Buddhist ritual so we can put body, speech and mind together. And when they're combined together, and one day when they're beautifully synchronized, the practice becomes embodied, really powerful. So that's kind of the practical beginning part of it. But the actual real purpose for us being here is by combining body, speech and mind into the practice, then we can achieve the holy body, speech and mind of a Buddha. That's the reason. And then everything else comes within that. Why do we want to become a Buddha? So we can perfectly, effortlessly, spontaneously help sentient beings in whatever way that they need, release them from suffering and bring them to lasting happiness. So I actually wanted to start with a little video from His Holiness. And I'm hoping just a little bit of the sound will come across, but then I'm going to actually mute it because it's overdubbed in Russian. But here is His Holiness making a mandala offering. And what's so nice is how His Holiness doesn't rush. He does it very nicely. See how it's all really heaped up? It's not lacking in anything. So what better way to start than with His Holiness, the Dalai Lama? And you can see from that practice, you know, really nicely putting it together and then meditating on it, actually having the inner experience. So that was the long mandala offering. And often we do before teachings, before big initiations, in the Tara Puja and various other pujas. And it might look like a kind of a play activity or a little bit of a juvenile activity, but actually it did start out that way. So the story kind of goes that a little boy was walking along the beach one day, maybe down on the Gold Coast or Noosa or wherever it is, and who should come along but the Buddha. And so the little boy wanted to offer something to the Buddha, but he didn't have anything. So he grabbed a piece of slate or stone and he piled it up with sand and offered that, imagining it as Buddha fields filled with riches and beautiful things, and offered that to the Buddha just spontaneously. And from that, he created the karma to be reborn a Dharma king 1,000 times just from that one activity. So it may feel like you're playing around in the sandpit. And in fact, when Ursel came to Chenrezig Institute when he was about 3 years old, the first thing he did was go into the sandpit at Chenrezig Institute and play mandala offerings with all the kids. And they all just spontaneously made mandala offerings together for about the first half hour. But don't think that therefore it is just a juvenile activity. It's really, really profound. So let's have a look at just generally a little bit about mandalas in general. You know, we've got what's called sacred geometry, and there are many, many forms. So there's a quote here from Carl Jung: "My mandalas were cryptograms concerning the state of the self, which was presented to me anew each day." So they're like symbols of wholeness, and we can spontaneously doodle to make mandalas. Carl Jung had a whole practice of painting mandalas to bring forth that kind of unification. So this top one, you can even see it's got the sun and the moon at the top, just like the Buddhist ones do. They can be spontaneous ways of, just by expressing them, we can spontaneously heal. Also, Native American Indians and Aztecs, we've seen wind catchers, but they are actually a form of mandalas. And rose windows, so this one's from Notre Dame in Paris. Truly spectacular visions of light. You can't help but be transported. And because of the shape, the form of being round, it does something to our psyche. So these kind of symbols are universal and have been around for, you know, countless generations. We also have secular geometry. So if you've ever had a love of dolls, houses, or miniatures, or been transported when you go to IKEA and you go through all those floor plans, and there are, you can walk into this room, and as you walk into each of those rooms, it's like you walk into a potential life, a perfect life where everything is in its right place and clean and beautiful. So why are these places so incredibly popular? And actually, it's this subliminal urge that we have to create a sacred space around us, to make our space perfect. Anything that we do to decorate our house is actually this sublimated urge to create the environment of a Buddha. But we just get stuck on the external and think it's all about renovations. So we're really missing a trick. So anytime you actually do renovate your house, think, by renovating my house, may I bring forth the Buddha's mandala? Then it'd be worth it. So, you know, we have this urge towards wholeness, but it's kind of, in this case, been hijacked by consumerism. Then what else do we have? In the beginning. So His Holiness the Dalai Lama has often said that we may imagine the mandala offering that we make representing the planet Earth, the solar system, the galaxy, or the universe as modern science conceives of them today. So it makes no difference whether we think of it like this or whether we have the traditional depiction. The point is that offering a mandala represents the willingness to give everything in the universe to receive teachings or vows or empowerment. So we can be creator of worlds. We are the creator of our world. So we can take that process into our hands, literally. So the mandala, offering the mandala, and the mandala depictions in Tibetan Buddhism are actually surprisingly similar to the Christian myth of, you know, in the beginning was the word, you know, and the airs moved upon the waters. So I'm not very skilled about all of that, but I've heard those words before. It's familiar to us all. So for the Tibetan Buddhist mandala, Om Vajra Bhumi Ahum, first you have a wind mandala, blue, and then you have a white water mandala, And then on top, you have the golden earth mandala, the ground, which is the ground of Buddha nature. So it's so similar, isn't it? It's blessed with Om Ahum. And when we recite the Om Ahum, what it actually means is primordial wisdom of bliss and emptiness of the three individual indivisible Vajras arising in the aspect of the wind mandala. Arising in the aspect of the water mandala. So it's incredibly profound, just those few little words, the Om Ahum, the golden Vajra ground. Here's an image of the Kala Chakra mandala, which is a very elaborate one. So this is like a bird's eye view or an architectural drawing. But it's very similar to the one that we just saw of the whole worlds and solar systems. Everything is in there. So it might be quite difficult to identify each of the elements in this Kala Chakra mandala, but I've got some 3D versions of it as well that we'll see in a moment. The other thing to remember about mandalas is that we're not just offering one. So here, an image of fractals. I mean, when fractals were discovered, how wonderful was that for the world? So this is a quote actually from a book called Opening the Lotus. It's in the Sakya tradition, and they have very elaborate mandalas. And this is what they say. The nature of the mandala is your own body, wealth, and virtuous deeds accumulated in the three times and those of others. So it's everything from past, present, future of all of your wealth and virtuous deeds accumulated together. The cause of the mandala is the formation of various jewels. The form of the mandala is Mount Meru, the four continents, the sun and the moon, which emanate from the mind 100 million fold. And each of these mandala sets issues forth millions of light rays. And upon the tip of each of these light rays are countless sets of worlds with the four continents mandalas. And they're radiating rays. And on the tips of those light rays are countless more mandala worlds. So it's just like this. It goes on forever, just like a fractal, infinitely large and infinitely small. Sand mandalas, again, the same image of the bird's eye architectural view, a depiction of the entire perfect universe. Sand mandalas are created painstakingly over several days or a week. So they say that the world of the mandala is similar to ours, but it's not the same. So it's not that we're offering the ordinary world as extraordinary as it is. Because our world is a product of our karma, and so it is fraught with difficulty as well. But the mandala is a product of our merit, so we're offering a perfect world. Here are some of the monks creating a mandala, and what's even more extraordinary is, of course, as they're creating it, they're doing it upside down, aren't they? And they've got masks on so they don't breathe and disturb the grains. The grains are all blessed and consecrated, and they are the five wisdoms brought into physical reality as the five different colours. And so each of those grains is like a tiny miniature Buddha. And how they actually distribute the grains is these kind of tubes, a little bit like cake decorating tubes, with a rough bit along the edge, and they just rub the stick up and down that rough bit, so there's this tiniest bit of vibration. So one grain of sand at a time comes out. The designs that they make are even more extraordinary because they're three-dimensional. It's not just flat sand grains, but they build them up. And then you do the offering. And then at the completion, it's all swept up in just a couple of sweeps to remind us of impermanence, that as worlds come into existence, they also go out of existence. But all of these grains, these incredible grains, blessed, consecrated as countless Buddhas, are then often tipped into the water system, into a river or into the sea to bless all of the beings in that water. So here's an aerial view dissolving back into the Dharmakaya. So here's a contemporary version of the Kala Chakra Mandala, and you can get a better idea, can't you, how it's three-dimensional. And you can see that what from a bird's eye view, who knows what it is, from the side we can see that there's a palace in the middle and it's got these four gates on either side, quite elaborate gates. And then there's another little palace here with some more gates and so on. So this, the Kala Chakra Mandala, is a body, speech and mind mandala combined. It's like three layers. So I really like this this kind of fusion of the contemporary and the traditional Tibetan. This is a scale model of a mandala, so you could get an idea of the mandala house, the mansion, the heavenly mansion, the gates, the beautiful roof, all the different objects around with various meanings. You can see there's little offering goddesses here. The whole mandala is resting on this blue box, which is supposed to be space, and the double doji. So you can see the double doji here, the crossed vajra. We're a little familiar with what the vajra looks like, the bell and doji that's used in Buddhist ritual. So we may be tempted to think that this is a hard, solid thing, but actually a vajra is a diamond thunderbolt. So we're often used to in the comics, you know, when they do the shape of lightning. So we know lightning doesn't look like that. It symbolizes lightning. So these vajras also don't look like this, solid and flat like that. They symbolize lightning, the wisdoms. So this is my opinion. This doesn't come from any Buddhist text, but I think the vajras are a lot like Tesla coils. So Nikolai Tesla, incredible magician, basically, scientist. And he harnessed this, you know, energy of electricity. And here is a Tesla coil. And doesn't it look like one of those double vajras? So when we see these vajras, here's a metal one, you know, it's got the dragons on it, but it's also got all of these curly bits, and that's the light. So don't think that they're heavy. They represent the wisdoms and completely harnessed, perfected wisdoms. So not out of control like a Tesla coil like that, but perfectly controlled, beautiful, holistic. So whenever you see those crossed vajras, you'll see them on the brocade in front of the Geshe's or the Lama's thrones. That's because we're offering a throne of a crossed vajra. And what that is a seat of the five wisdoms. So imagine it as light, alive, the most subtle form of a Buddha's body manifesting as light. So when we build up a mandala offering, it's not quite as elaborate as something like a sand mandala or the whole depiction. What we're doing is we're offering all of these incredible substances for the purpose of creating merit of the substantial cause of the resources of a Buddha. So here is a three-dimensional gold mandala offering. So instead of making with the piles of jewels, it's a more permanent one, and it's got all of the various elements there in gold. So we have the base with all the base elements of the water mandala, the air mandala, the golden ground mandala. Then we have the four continents and the subcontinents. So this is represented here as one continent, and on either side, the subcontinents. We have the seven precious things and a treasure vase. We have eight offering goddesses. There's a couple here. We have the insignia of each of the four continents. There's one here. I think that's the cow. That's the unplowed harvest. The offering goddesses, the mansion of riches at the top, all the riches of gods and humans. The sun and the moon, well, he's the moon. The victory banner, and on the other side, the umbrella. And right at the very top, the Dharma chakra. So I'll just stop the share for a moment. So at the start of teachings, often a mandala offering will be made. Someone will make it in their lap, but someone will offer the more permanent one to the Lama so all the grains don't end up in his lap. And so this is the Lungri Tungpa Center one. It's a tropical one because it's got bananas and apples and pears in it. And the tail of the five wisdoms goes over your left shoulder, and then you offer, you put to your forehead, and then you offer to the guru. So you can do your own as best as you can. We this is all we could manage back in the day. We've got another one now, a little bit more gold. But I quite like this with the fruit, the fruits of our virtues. okay, so then when we're doing the mandala offering ourselves, just like His Holiness was doing, we have the base. This is a three-ring mandala, 1, 2, 3, the Dharma chakra on top, beautiful coloured grains, some jewels in there, and here is the map. So the mandala is made up of all different heaps, and they go in a particular order. So you can see there's the continents and the subcontinents on either side. Here is an image a little bit like that quote that I read you. So the continents in the seven oceans, the sun and the moon, the mansion at the top, and then light rays emanating. And at the tip of each light ray, another mandala and light rays emanating. And then at the tip of each one of those, another mandala. So there's the fractals right there. So with your mandala set, it's good to have what's called fat rice. So arborio rice or barley, not skinny Indian rice, something really luscious. Put in anything of value. So lots of the nuns will put in their old wedding rings or jewelry, really precious things. You can put in money from all the different continents of the world. To clean your mandala set, forget about brasso or anything disgusting like that that leaves a residue. All you have to do is get a basin and pour in a bottle of Coca-Cola. And then you just leave your mandala set in the Coca, just the metal part in the Coca-Cola for about 3 hours and pull it out, rinse, done. Really easy. The care of the grains and to make sure there's no insects and anything like that in your in the notes, you can actually incorporate the six perfections just in the care of your mandala set. There are different types of mandalas. Some are called seven heap mandalas where you just use the base and the bottom ring. In the Tara Puja, actually it's a 23 heap mandala. So it's the bottom ring and the top one. In Guru Puja, it's these three rings. And you can also do a four-ring mandala. So each teacher will probably teach you in a slightly different way where the particular heaps go, which ring they go on. And there's quite a difference across the board. And often it's to do with if it's a three or a four-ring mandala offering. So I learned slightly differently from what Lama Zopa Rinpoche teaches, but it's good to know all the different variations, and especially like in Tara Puja when it's kind of different from what we're used to. So now I just wanted to stop for a moment and actually do a demonstration for those of you that haven't had a chance to see a mandala offering in action. So I'm just going to move the camera for a moment and put it down here so that you can see. So if you're on a chair, you want to have a portable lap. So a basin is good. Put the basin in your lap, then you've got a lap. Otherwise, if you're cross-legged, it's okay. And then you have your cloth, and often it's got a little cord, or you can just tuck it in like a serviette, and you get your front corner and you put it on the desk, and you have your mat. So that's in part of your notes. Here is my beautifully freshly cleaned mandala set. Soaked it in Coca-Cola last night. And my rings, you get your rings, you put them on your right knee, and you make sure that they're the right way up, because they've all got the auspicious symbols and often the goddesses and everything that we offer. So we don't want to offer upside down goddesses. Get your Dharma chakra, you put on the space in front. It's going to be a little bit noisy. You hold a few grains in your hand, and when you hold the base, you hold it like this with your fingers underneath. Because if you hold the edge like this, your fingers are going to break off. So you hold it so that it's right in the middle there, nice and stable, and a few grains in your hand so it's not empty. Then wiping away negativity. So the wrist is flat and you're like washing, and you're letting go of the grains as you're letting go of the negativities, and you're washing away all of the sufferings of sentient beings and their causes. Then the Onze says, Jinkam Buwa Jiwo, which means, hey everyone, let's offer a mandala. And that's when you get started. Om Vajra Bhumi Ahum. So you do three times with your fist up like this to bring the blessings of the body, speech, and mind of all the Buddhas towards you. A few grains. First ring. Om Vajra Bhumi Ahum. Mighty golden ground. Wanchen Segi Saji. Om Vajra Reki Ahum. The Vajra fence, your practice. Kiachari Koyo Kiko We Usu, Mount Meru in the middle. Ria Galpo Rira Shalopapo, Lord Zambolin, No Balancho, Jandraminyan. That's the four continents. Subcontinents, a little bit like backstitch. Ludan Lupa. Nayabdan, Nayabshan, Yodan Dan Lan Jodro, Draminyan Dan, Draminyan Gida. Notice I've got a little watch in here because we all need more time, right? Then the insignia of each of the continents. Rinpoche, Riawo, Pa Sangishin, Dojo Yapa, Mamo Pa Yeloto. Now, this is where I put on the second ring. Rinpoche just keeps going and does the Rinpoches. Kolo Rinpoche, Nobo Rinpoche, Tsumo Rinpoche, Lompo Rinpoche, Lampo Rinpoche, Tacho Rinpoche, Mapo Rinpoche, Techinpo Yibomba. Seven precious things and the treasure vase. So the easy way to remember this is large diamond square, small diamond square. So that was the large diamond and square. The small diamond square are the goddesses, the Mars. Girma, Trimwama, Luma, Karma, Metoma, Dupoma, Nansama, Trichama. Top ring. Only four heaps in this one, the sun and the moon. Girma, Dawa. Rinpoche du chola nampa gyawa gyalsen. So that's victory banner over all delusions, and the precious parasol, the broly, our protection of the Dharma. And then all the riches of gods and humans go on top. Usu ladami e peljo punso sopa masonwa me pa zanjing yi du wonwa di dan jin shin sawa dan gilpa. Chepe Palden Lama Dampa Nandan. And then, because it's Tatara, Kiapa Chiyan Jetsuma Pema Droma Laso Kodan Chepe Namla Jinkamo Agio. Few grains in your hand so it's not empty. Then finally you can hold it with both hands. Tushe Troe Don Tushe Suso Jene Kandaso Droa Magio Namke Taran Ampe Simshen Tamshela.
Remember who you're offering to. Remember to send it off.
Idam Guru Rana Mandala Kamniyatayami. Tip towards you for realizations. Very gentle, auspicious rainfall of flowers. Don't chuck them away. Your mandala is very joyously accepted by all of our objects of refuge. Then you get your rings, put them in nicely. Get the Dharma chakra, put it in the middle. Get the base, put it on top. So it's all neat. And you get your front and back corner together. Wind it down all the way to the ends. Then all you have to do is just tie it once and it'll stay closed. Perfect, ready to go. And then keep it in something like a biscuit tin so that the mice don't eat the grains. So that's kind of the, instead of around the world in 80 days, we've just offered an entire universe in 80 seconds or so. There are many beautiful descriptions of and examples on YouTube of the mandala offering. So the main thing is to have your map. So that's, and there's a bigger version here, and to get quite flexible about when to put the rings on and become familiar with, say, with the Tara Puja, you just don't offer the Mars, the offering goddesses. So each one's slightly different. So let's have a little bit just of the amazing, mind-blowing, profound examples of what we're actually offering. There's another map here. All here are the different levels of the form and formless realms as well. You can kind of see all the different continents. And this one's a little bit clearer. So the base, the Vajra ground, our Buddha nature, the blessing Om Ahum, the Vajra fence, our practice. And then there are seven layers of golden mountains and seven oceans. The oceans have the qualities of the eight qualities of water, just like with the water bowls. And then Mount Meru, the metaphorical center of the universe. So this mountain is amazing because it's bigger at the top than the bottom. It's like an upside down pyramid. So His Holiness the Dalai Lama said, you know, of course it's a legend. It's not physically there, but it is a description of the universe that encompass it, just like when we see drawings of atoms and nucleus and protons and blah, blah, blah. They don't actually look like that, all symmetrical, but it's a description to help us keep them in mind. So the same with the mandala offering. Here's another one. I love this because it's got like the little photographs of each of the continents. So this is us, Jambuvipa. Because I think that's Bodh Gaya there with the stupa. So we are the continent called Jambuvipa after the jambu tree. And the jambu tree is the one, the beautiful peaches, you know, that monkey tried to steal from the heavens. And when they fall into the water, they make this sound, jambu, beautiful sound. So that's what our continent is named after. And when your kiddies ask you, Mummy, why is the sky blue? It's because we're on the blue side of Mount Meru. And so that's the blue reflection. And the other worlds have a red sky or a yellow golden sky or a white sky. So the riches of Jambuling, the precious tree, has the seven precious substances, golden roots, silver trunk, lapis lazuli branches, crystal leaves, red pearls for flowers, jade petals and diamond fruit. The tree fulfills your every desire exactly as you could wish, for all the clothes and medicines and implements and everything that you need. The rustles of its leaves tells the story of the four seals of the Dharma. So we can't actually see it because our karmic vision doesn't allow us, but this is the riches of a human realm that we're in. B Then on one of the rings, we offer the seven precious things and the treasure vase. So the seven precious things is also extensive, and that's why His Holiness the Dalai Lama didn't rush. Because, for instance, when we offer the inestimable wheel, Kolo Rinpoche, it represents mindfulness. The Dharma wheel has the power to lead the four great kings with the four branches of an army of a Dharma king. The wheel has 1,000 spokes. It's made of light or fire, like the sun. And when we offer it, we dedicate for the continued teaching of the Dharma. So that's while you're putting that one heap down, that's what you're thinking of. The other one I really love is the precious horse. So that we often see the horse on the wind horse for energy, for spiritual energy. So if you're ever tired, this one is a wonderful one to offer. It represents vitality, luster, completely free of sickness. The horse is white, has a bridle of beautiful jewels, and it can traverse the whole world 3 times in a day without getting tired. And when it sweats, its coat glistens like peacock feathers. So when we offer the precious horse, we offer so that we can have supreme physical powers, vitality, and energy. So each of these things has a profound meaning, and that's also in your notes, so that as you're doing the practice, maybe each day just focus on one of those things so that gently, gently become familiar with the whole lot. And then it becomes really inspiring. Then the goddesses. So 8 goddesses. They're 2-armed goddesses. They're often of different colours. Some are white, some are red, some are yellow, some are kind of multicoloured. They carry all the beautiful divine objects. They're dancing. And as you can see with all of their clothes, from the energy of their spiritual, you know, realizations and power, instead of needing a wind machine, all of the robes, they just waft in the energy of your realizations, from the power of the realizations. So that's with all of the deities, their robes are wafting there from the energy emanating from them. And then at the end we offer the sun and the moon, of course, and then some of the auspicious symbols. So the treasure vase was offered with the 7 precious things, and the treasure vase, you know, all the resources necessary to help sentient beings, unending resources. Now, the top of the mandala, the precious parasol, the precious broly. It's white, made of divine substances, jeweled handle, 1,000 spokes, lapis lazuli tip, pearl ornaments around it, and it symbolizes the protection of the Dharma. So this, when we have an umbrella, whatever the weather, we can go anywhere and we're protected. We don't have to stop the hail. We don't have to stop the rain. That's impossible anyway. We just need our mind protected and we're free to go anywhere. So it gives us supreme confidence. So that's the protection of the Dharma. Just protect our mind and we're fine. Then we can go anywhere and help anybody. The other one, the victory banner. So the victory banner over the delusions. This is really important because we're in a battle. We're in a battle with all of the, as Venerable Rabina says, all of the flatmates in our head. And usually it's civil war, and usually they're a bad influence on us. And we have to be vigilant and counter them with our wisdom. So the victory banner is a really auspicious one. Victory over the delusions. It's actually an epithet for the Buddha. And then we offer to the guru deity. We remember emptiness. We remember our bodhicitta motivation. On the top, the Dharma wheel, And that goes on the top because there is nothing higher than the Dharma. Even all the riches of gods and humans, all the riches in the world, all of Elizabeth Taylor's diamonds, all of the vaccines that you could possibly imagine, nothing is richer than the Dharma. Nothing is better than the Dharma. So the Dharma wheel goes on the very top. It's the crowning glory. And then everything underneath it goes in that direction. Then when we're making the offering, there is something called the three purities, how to make an offering. So just in general, the three purities are motivation, the field, who we offer to, and the basis, what we offer. So motivation is the most important, why we're doing this practice, because most of the practice happens in our mind. So it's really important that we have a good motivation. And so what's so nice in the Buddhist tradition is that you don't have to second guess yourself. You can adjust your motivation. So even if your motivation is pretty crappy to start with, it might just be like, I'm feeling really, really poor. And so if I just make mandala offerings, maybe I'll make enough merit to get some money. So that's a terrible motivation to have. But you can start there. That's all right. Start where you are. But then absolutely we have to adjust it. So then you just ask why a few times. So why do I need money anyway? Well, you know, to live. Well, why do I need to live? Oh, because I have this human life and I don't want to waste it. Why? Because there are all these countless sentient beings out there suffering and I've got a chance to do something about it. Aha, so now we're getting there. So you adjust your motivation. You use your words and then it becomes really powerful. And you keep on asking why until you get to bodhicitta, till you get to the altruistic purpose. Not just altruism for others, but with our eye on the prize, enlightenment for others. Enlightenment for the benefit of all. And to release any thoughts of it's not for pride, it's not to show off, it's none of those things. Motivation, really important. If we have the right motivation, then everything will turn out well. If our motivation is corrupted, it's not going to be any good. The field, the three fields, enlightenment, merit, and mercy. So the field of enlightenment, our objects of refuge, the guru deity, the guru not separate from the deity. Aryatara, Intara Puja, the real emanation of our guru, Lama Zopa Rinpoche's Holiness the Dalai Lama. Who are they really? Aryatara. Who is Aryatara really? The holy guru. No difference. The other fields of merit and mercy, who we're offering for. You know, so often we make offerings to our benefactors, our parents, those who have supported us, maybe the person who taught you to read. And the field of mercy, the vulnerable, the sick, the old, the aging, the homeless. The basis of the offering is the actual physical offering. So that's the mandala set. So you can't ever take anything back out of your mandala set because it's not yours. So in relation to mandalas, our initial motivation might be so that we have success in our practice, success in our studies, that we have enough resources and enough merit to continue our Dharma journey to enlightenment, that we don't run out of steam, we don't run out of our the merit of this life and just keel over and die. So we need enough resources and enough good karma in the bank. So that's like an immediate motivation. Of course, we've got to still ask why, and so that's the ultimate reason, the big one, enlightenment for the benefit of all, bodhicitta. Then we have to remember who we're offering to, the guru deity, and The basis is all those four types of mandalas we talked about last week. The outer mandala, the set, the mandala set, the inner mandala, the secret and suchness mandala. So just recently, the FPMT hosted a teaching by His Holiness the Dalai Lama. And so Lama Dzogchen Boshe so earnestly got onto YouTube, you know, and requested the teaching. So here is the beautiful mandala, and see how it's got this incredible jade jewel. It looks like a crown covered in pearls and diamonds, beautiful gold. And they're holding not just a kata, but five colored katas of the five wisdoms. So serious and so earnest, Rinpoche, just moves the heart, doesn't it? And then so happy to offer. So really, we're combining body, speech, and mind in this extraordinary practice, and it's a way of generating so much energy, so much merit. What will happen if you find that your practice is stagnating, or if you're studying and nothing's going in, it feels like your mind is too full, too tight, or if you're just really tired and procrastinating about everything? Instead of pushing, just go and do something fun, like a mandala offering. And actually, it rejuvenates you, creates space. So now we can have some questions. Someone wave at me if you have questions or comments. Francisca, go for it. Can you unmute? Oh, wait a second. Can't hear. Oh, there we are. Sorry. Go for it.
But anyway, couple of questions. Can we mix the barley and the rice together? How much grain do we need? And how large is the square that you use?
So the square is good to be maybe a meter 15, which is kind of like, or a meter minimum, but a meter 15. So the width of a normal bolt of fabric, and just make it square. It's good to have two layers. So you have the bolt of fabric, and then you sew another layer, a diamond into it on the inside, and make it all nice and slippery like satin. And then that way everything flows really nicely. And if it wears out, you can just replace that inner layer. You don't have to replace the whole thing. For the rice, you probably need, I think 2 kilos, because you need lots left over so that you've got lots of handfuls to grab. I wouldn't necessarily mix rice and barley. The beautiful thing about barley is it's golden, so it looks really rich and beautiful. I don't have any grain in my set at all. I've got really sturdy shells, not little delicate shells that can smash, but sturdy shells. And I've got lots of those little glass kind of things that they put into vases so that that vases don't fall over. And they look like little jewels. So they're really gorgeous. And then I've got lots of jewelry from the op shop. And some buttons. You know, you can get really nice buttons that are novelty buttons, like Santa Claus or Tara's hand. So anything that you put in, though, oh, yeah, little bottles of jewels. You want to make sure that it's not sharp, that you've filed the sharp bits off so that you don't injure yourself. Money is a really good one to put in, and really precious jewels. I've also got a little tiny piece of brick from the Berlin Wall, you know, when the Berlin Wall came down. A little car with a V for the Vajra vehicle. And I found when I got my mother's, inherited my dead mum's mandala set, she had a little tiny, like a farm, you know, you get the farm sets. She had a farm icon of me. So I discovered she offered me, and she'd painted it like I looked for about 15 years, all in black with bright orange hair. And I went, oh, my God, she's put me in there. Anyway, so I'm offering me. Then I remember Venerable Rabina telling this story of, you know, we offer our mandala set. So she had this gorgeous, incredible mandala set. And you might have seen, you know, it's bigger than her, basically, with great big fat crystals in it and all sorts of things. And she loved her mandala set. And then one day she left it on the subway in New York. And she's like, oh, no, I've lost my mandala set. And then she realized, it's not hers. She's just offered it to the Buddhas 1,000 times over. It's not her mandala set. So there's the teaching. That's what we've got to remember. And that's why we can't take anything back out of it. We can exchange the grains out. That's okay. But the riches that you offer to it, they're not yours. They're the Buddhas. They're all sentient beings.
Can I ask one more question without dominating? Now, many, many years ago, I had an aspiration to do long mandala offerings. I've never done one in my life. I got all the grain ready with bits and pieces, and then I took something back out of it to give to Malcolm's daughter for her 21st birthday. But I'd never actually offered it, but I aspired. So have I created a
No, then a you negative? Just say, excuse me, Buddha, I just have to borrow this thing for a little bit.
Right.
Like in Pavonka Rinpoche, where the monkey just had one bowl, so he'd offer to the Buddha, and then after 20 minutes he'd go, excuse me, Buddha, I just have to borrow the bowl, and then he'd get the bowl and he'd have his lunch.
Right.
Okay.
Thanks.
Okay, what else? Who else has a question? Was it Alison? Yes, go for it.
So I noticed in the video that that the huge mandala had jewels, but they were strung together, so you don't need to pull it all apart.
No, I think that was extra decorations on top.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So what we want is piles of grains, so that each heap represents those things, and it's just a way of us focusing our mind. But then you can drape all sorts of things on top. So I know, you know, some of the nuns, they might have strings of pearls and whatever that they wind around the top and various extras like that.
Okay. I was thinking of, I've got some jewellery that I never, ever wear, and I was thinking of using it.
So jewellery,
I could just pull it apart, couldn't I?
Yeah, pull it apart. Oh, yeah. But if you have round pearls, mm-hmm. they will drop out and they will roll. So what I've got is kind of the little misshapen pearls. They're really quite good. And then the other things that I've done is if I've got round beads, I've actually sewn three of them together into little groups of three. Or even if you just have a group of a large round bead with a little tiny one on the top, it means when they fall out of your lap, they're not going to roll all the way across the floor. So that's the main difficulty with beads, is that they roll everywhere. And when you're doing your mandala set as beginners, please don't feel like the whole time you're offering your mandala that you're picking up stuff from around you. Just go for it. Just chuck stuff everywhere. It's okay. It's an exuberant thing. And at the end of the whole practice, then you can go and sweep it all up. And that is kind of like the Buddhist version of walking on Lego. You want to be really careful. And then I have heard, so I'm not sure if this comes from Lama Zopa Rinpoche or one of the nuns, but they said when you pick the stuff up off the floor, you can't just put it back in your mandala set again because it's dirty. It's been on the floor. So wash it or cleanse it in some way, and then you can put it back in the set.
Okay. Thank you, Miffy.
No worries. Who else? Charlene.
Yes. I want to thank you for saying that you use a tub in your lap. I always have to sit in a chair. I couldn't sit on a cushion, and nobody could figure out how I could do it in a chair, and you have the answer.
Fantastic. That's great. So now there's no excuse, Charlene. You've got to come along with your mandala set now.
That's right. I do have one.
Who else?
I have a question.
Oh, me, yes.
I'm sorry, I'm pretty new at this. So I just had a question about, like, are there certain more auspicious days when you do a mandala offering, like kind of like in pujas, or, you know, if you don't do it every day?
Yeah, you do it every day, several times every day. So if you have a sitting practice where you sit and you meditate and you go through refuge prayer, seven limb prayer, mandala offering. If you can, do a long mandala offering. It's so much more exciting and fun and nice and rich than just the short mandala offering. So if you have the time, definitely do every day, because it'll rejuvenate everything, your whole practice, your mind, your environment. At the very minimum, when you go to puja, take your mandala set with you. Don't be shy. Please, please, everybody, don't be shy. What has often happened is that people, say, from Lungri Tungpa Centre, we've been over the years all learning how to do the mandala offerings. We'll go off to puja somewhere and it's only us that are doing the mandala offering, and none of the Sangha are, nobody else. And so you might be a little disconcerted about that and think, or embarrassed. Just do it anyway. So the Sangha don't realise that by them not doing it, they're setting a really bad example. They're probably embarrassed too, or shy, or just never learnt, and now time has ticked on and how do I learn? Also, people might feel a bit self-conscious because you're doing it and it's just like, imposter syndrome. What's this stupid thing that I'm doing, just playing around with, you know, grains of whatever. But actually, this is what it's designed for, that it breaks down our sense of reality. And we think this is reality and this is just a silly little activity or just an imagination thing. But that's grasping an inherent existence. And so, actually, by doing a mandala offering and offering all of these outrageous things, we're breaking down our grasping at inherent existence. So it's a really, as well as breaking down our pride and breaking down our miserliness. So we need courage to do it. And if all of us lay people go along to puja and start doing mandala offerings, the monks and nuns will be a bit enthused to do it too. And if people are a bit dismissive of the mandala offering, it actually shows that you haven't got a grasp on karma and dependent arising, because this is harnessing the power of that. It's so profound. It's not something to be dismissed. It's actually putting our understanding of emptiness and dependent arising into practice. So that should give us courage. And so, Min, you know, just please, at least if you manage to go to puja together as a group, support each other. Have you got your mandala offering? Have you got the basin? You know, la, 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 let's go for it. And then if it tips over or you lose it halfway through, just quickly offer what you've done. Buddha will be so happy. It's okay. And just keep practicing. Pauline.
I'm sorry.
Oh, yes, sorry. Before,
but, I mean, you didn't, in a way, answer my question. I asked if you can't do it every single day, even though you should, are there more auspicious days, like, you know, the full
puja
moon,
days,
new moon?
Yeah, at puja.
Okay, puja do days. Puja. Okay, thank you.
Yeah. And, of course, any of those, there are 4 days per month where everything is multiplied. So Medicine Buddha Day, Tara Day, the precepts days, full moon and new moon. So that they're the minimum 4 days that whatever you do is greatly magnified. So they're great days to do them on. But in puja, when you go to puja, and if you attend puja online, that's even better, because no one can see you stuffing up. So you can really go for it. And then when we all get to meet again in person, we'll be just, you know, when you see a whole room filled with beautiful mandala sets out there in front of you, when our gurus see all of those mandala offerings, it makes them so happy, you know, how we're practicing. And actually, I have to tell you, at the Bendigo retreat a couple of years ago, when Lama Zorro Rinpoche came out, and he got me to make a mandala cloth for him, and he said, you know, when people travel, they don't take their mandala sets with them. They take their toilet paper with them, but they don't take their mandala sets. So, you know, he kind of made the point. So the minimum that we should do, even if you don't do mandalas in puja, the very minimum that we should do when there is an initiation or teachings from Lama Zopa Rinpoche and there's the requesting mandala, we absolutely have to make that mandala. That's the minimum. So thank you, Min. Thank you, Fu. It's a really good question. Now, I think we've just got time, Pauline. Yes.
Oh, hello. Thank you, Miffy. Beautiful work. I'm just wondering, what map do we use for the daily practice? Because I've got Tara maps here, I think.
I think the daily practice, the nice one is the 37 heap, Talama Losang Tubwan Dorji Chung, which is the one in Guru Puja, because that's you know, the Guru and Vajradhara and Buddha, everything all combined.
Okay. And the other question, what's the benefit of having a mandala set on your altar? I've just noticed little ones, people put little mini ones on the altar.
Altars might have a more permanent mandala set up.
Yeah.
So not wrapped up.
No,
but
no,
actually just the tower, the mandala tower. And so that's like you've got a permanent offering to the Buddha there. So it's a very nice thing to have. So often the little mandalas, mandala sets are quite nice for that because they'll fit on your altar and then you make it afresh yourself in the practice.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Anybody else? Last questions?
I do have one more if it's okay. So, you know how, like, with certain practices, there's a separate set of, like, Dorje and Bell. Some of the gurus or master have their own set of, like, mandala offerings that no one really see, or am I just...
No, generally when our gurus travel, they travel very, very lightly, and so they use whatever set is there at the center. And then that blesses that set for the center, which is really nice. They might have their own set at home. Whether we see that or not, I'm not sure.
Okay.
But if you're at a center, it's really good to have a beautiful mandala set and a beautiful bell and dorji and to offer them to the teacher when they come. And then they use them. And then we can all have a go afterwards.
Thank you.
Okie dokie. Oh, Francisca, quickly, last one.
What if you can't afford a mandala set? Can you just do the hand mudra and offer that?
No. Good point. If you can't afford a mandala set, you go to a shop like Executive Chef and you get their sets of metal round cookie cutters. So a set costs about $21. And it's about that size, so it's perfect size. You get about 20 rings in there, so you only need 3. The box that it comes in is your base, and then you get a shell for the top. So when we have our workshops, everybody gets a cookie cutter set. You can also get plastic ones from the $2 shop, and they're all different colors, and you can stick on stick on jewels around the edge to make them really beautiful. And they're a really good traveling set back in the day when we used to be able to travel because there's no metal. So they're light and they'll go through a metal detector. So you can just have your 3 plastic rings with jewels and the base and off you go wherever. And then wherever you are, you just buy a couple of kilos of rice. Good point. Excellent. Thank you. So that's it. we should dedicate that May we enjoy our practice. May we create mountains of merit so that we can continue to progress. May we put the party into the puja. That also by practicing like this, may we bring all of our realizations and all of our practice to fruition. May we delight the guru. And by doing all of that, then may we be able to free the whole world from suffering forever and bring them to the state of peerless enlightenment. So I wanted to invite you all, if you could, to come to our Tara Puja. So if you're in Brisbane or Australia, Australian Eastern Standard Time, it's Sunday the 21st of March. And it's at 2 p.m. It's about an hour and a half. If you're in America, Mountain Daylight Time, it's going to be 10 p.m., 10 to 11:30. But Tara practice is a nighttime practice, so it's okay. Doris, I have no idea what time it's going to be where you are, but I hope you can come along.
That's okay. I'm used to whisking around the world now.
Oh, good. And I do believe we are going to have a part two of the Dharma Toolkit where we'll talk about things like the Bell and Dorji and things like that as well. So you'll have to be in touch with the Marys.
Dear Mithy, thank you so much. And yes, we are so grateful. Really beyond grateful that you have offered us these incredible teachings and helped to inspire our practice. We're looking forward to seeing you for Dharma Kit Part 2 in October. I put the dates in the chat box. We're also looking forward to participating in the Tara Puja on the 20th Mountain Standard Time and also seeing you back in April. And there's many other classes in between, but Mithy, please... I just really we're saying thank you much.
That's just brilliant. So for the Americans, it's going to be like a rocking Saturday night. I hope to see you there. See you soon, everyone. Enjoy.
Thank you so much, Mithy. Thank you, everyone, internationally for joining us. Thank you.